Hi, my name is Walter Mather, and this is Uncommon.
Hi, my name is Kieran, and this is Uncommon.
Uncommon is a production by Neural, a full-service digital agency. If you want to grow with a premium agency and have the ability to work with Jordan directly, then learn more at neural.com/media and request a callback. That's neural.com/media.
My name is Jordan Michaelides, and I'm the host of Uncommon, a show that asks the why on business, media, current affairs, and sport. If you like this episode, do leave us a written review on your podcast app, particularly if you're on Apple Podcasts, as it does help the feed work out if you like this sort of content. To find all previous guests, just head to neural.com/uncommon. For the full video, you can search Uncommon Show on YouTube. For social, you can keep up to date with behind the scenes at uncommon_show on Instagram. But with all that being said, let's get into the episode.
My guest this week is Kieran Barber-Wilson and Walt Mather, both the co-founders of Share Gear and Dynamic Visuals. Gents, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Short notice too, so I appreciate that.
That's okay.
I was looking at openers, one-liners we can go with, and so I was speaking to, I won't say who, but I want to hear about this supposed Dorito collection.
Oh, interesting.
Interesting. Yeah, so I'll start it off. There's this thing called Deliveroo Plus, and they used to, you pay like a monthly price and, you know, you get free delivery on certain orders, but they also throw in free items from time to time.
I do.
So,
I've had this.
Yeah, during the month, during 1 month, they had a promotion where they were giving out jars of salsa and Doritos. And at the time, we had about 6 people working out of our office, so we got them all on the same account. Yeah. And we were doing about like between
four to six orders per day, I'd say.
Yeah.
So
we ended up with collectively maybe 12 liters of salsa.
Yeah.
That is still stored.
Yeah. We've still got it downstairs as well. I remember thinking like, why are we getting this? It didn't make any sense to me, but now in hindsight, like, because I know that they would. Did you guys get the Ben and Jerry's promotion?
We did. Yeah, I think we got a lot of them.
That was the best promotion.
Yeah, I was a fan of the Doritos promotion just because it was physically the largest object, so it was funny to just amass a large quantity.
But I when I think about it, I had not had that salsa in so many years. Like, I remember the days of when you'd come home from school, you make that salsa, you put cheese and guac and like whack it, or you put the cheese on, whack it in the microwave.
Beautiful.
Then some guac.
I don't think I ever had those days.
Really? That was
pretty much my dinner for like probably 4 years.
Yeah. I used to get it, like, because my parents would be working all the time, but on specific days. So, like, my mum would be home after school with us like Monday, Friday. Mm. And so we couldn't get away with it as much. But Tuesday to Thursday, we could make all sorts of things. I remember making like, my favorite thing to make was like a Milo thick shake.
Oh, huge.
Do you remember the old like milkshake maker things where you'd like sort of put it in the canister thing and then you just press it up into sort of.
And it had like that little metal spigot.
Yeah, it was so bad. Like if you compare it to like Nutribullets.
I've never had a Nutribullet.
It was really?
Never had one.
Nutribullet early access.
Pretty much.
Alpha.
It was. I got like really good at it because I worked at a cafe that had like four of them in a row and they'd make like shakes.
Nice.
Fuck.
That's the dream.
Yeah, I feel like I need to make one this Friday. Friday's cheat day, so I can have.
Nachos.
Yeah, nachos. Milo thick shake. I find it really interesting. I was chatting to Kieran before, like probably the other day about you guys. Mm-hmm. And I know looking at prior interviews and us catching up and chatting, you previously when you were both at Wesley, you were making this real life Angry Birds, Call of Duty, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. I hate that you start with real life Angry Birds, but I won't stop you. Please go on.
So what did you guys actually think you were going to be when you were growing up? Like before you were doing all this, did you always have an inkling for media or was there something else?
I definitely did. Ever since I was probably, it was 2009, so I think I was 11, 10 or 11 or 12 potentially. And that's when I first got into making videos just with the webcam on like a laptop. And then I pretty much from that point, it was quite definitive that I knew I wanted to be a filmmaker or a film director or something to do with video. I didn't really know.
Okay.
But that was me personally.
Yeah. Yeah. My story is a little bit different. When I was a lot younger, I liked drawing a lot. I liked, I used to make like stick figure animations on Paint and Windows Movie Maker.
Yeah.
And I used to do that when I was like very young. But really growing up, my strong suit was always more science.
Really?
And throughout school, I really stacked all my subjects to go towards a science background.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. And so I started making videos with Kieran. Kind of just...
How old were you guys?
14, 15.
Yeah.
When
I started with Kieran, yeah. I'd say.
Walt went from not knowing how to use a camera to like doing 3D motion tracking and After Effects like within 10 months.
Yeah. Kieran like propelled me incredibly fast. And once I started getting like a taste for it, like I was just looking up YouTube videos, learning how to do 3D effects and working with camera. Kieran was very generous to just straight up almost give me a camera that I could run around and use.
Really?
And then once I started that, I saved every bit of money I ever got and actually bought my first camera just before the end of school, which was really exciting.
What was the camera that you guys were like, what were you first shooting on, apart from that web?
Me personally, I was first shooting, the very first, I guess, was a laptop webcam.
Yeah.
And then that evolved to a flip camera, which was the little classic flip camera.
You mentioned this somewhere. I feel like on that client shoot, you mentioned about the first thing being the flip camera.
Yeah, flip camera.
That is a common trend amongst your... Like, you guys are a few years younger than me, but I didn't realise how popular the flip camera was.
Huge, yeah. Mike, shout out to North Borders.
Yeah, Mike had one as
it
well.
It was also his first camera.
Yeah.
So it seems like, that little bracket of getting into media-related things from, like, 2008 to 2010, you definitely got a flip camera somewhere in that time.
That's funny.
And then after a flip camera, it was a Sony Handycam. And then after a Sony Handycam, it was a slightly bigger Sony Handycam. And then it moved to what Walt came into the mix and Panasonic GH4. And I'd say that changed everything.
Yeah. So you were using sort of cameras similar to... So these are like Handycams, right?
Yeah. So after the flip camera, I was using cameras like this for probably the next 2 to 3 years.
Yeah.
And then when I first started making money from YouTube, I got like Sony's interchangeable lens, like, Super 35 mirrorless camera. It's pretty much like that, like pro version. So
Okay.
It's really cool. It was called the NEX VG20, and Sony actually discontinued that line of cameras, but it sort of evolved into the Sony FS100, the FS700.
Uh-huh.
So they were really cool, nifty cameras because they had interchangeable lenses. Mm. They had really good Dolby 5:1 audio with a nice mic, and they had headphone input, shutter speed control. That's all you really needed.
All the stuff you need.
Yeah. And that was good for like a novice coming from just using any automatic camera. It was sort of a nice little in-betweener before we got to the GH4, which was like full manual control, manual focus, which we had never really experienced.
Why the GH4? Is that just because that was the camera on the market?
There's a lot of reasons why the GH4 was so good.
So many reasons.
Like,
still to this day, why it's a great camera.
Like, you can still use a GH4, in my opinion, and get a really, really good looking shot.
I'm pretty sure you guys have that for rent as well. You have a GH4 for rent.
We have two GH4s, which were Walt and I's personal GH4s. Wow. So the two GH4s...
Collectors
of
them.
Yeah, actually.
You should never ever remove that as just like a memory of where it all started.
Well, the thing is, like, there's even better items on our website that you can rent that are memories, such as the very first GoPro.
Yeah, the original GoPro Hero HD is available for rent.
Really?
For like $1 or $2 or something.
Yeah. Maybe we took it down when we did the... there's some funny items on that.
But that's sort of what makes things unique. Like, I think when people see that... So, you know, actually, I'm going to introduce you to a guy who does a lot of, like, short film productions, and he was blown away by your pricing in comparison to most of the industry. And he's like, holy shit, have I not found these guys.
Yeah.
He's going to start operating our camera rig once it's all put together and everything.
Nice.
But it's kind of nice to have a
to have a brand that has little things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because those sort of people will notice. They'll be like, why don't they have that? And then they'll get chatting to you about it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So we want to be share gear to be a reflection of our personality as much as possible.
Yeah.
But I think there's a certain line that you can cross where you do have to do certain things in standards with the industry because there are codes and you want to be respectful. Mm. But we definitely want to bring a new flavor to the industry.
And speaking of flavors and Doritos, that was actually one of our pre-release items if you were lucky enough to beta test the site.
When we were testing our API function on our website, we had that same salsa jar as like a product.
No.
And it was live on the website.
Yeah, people
so you originally chose the salsa jar? The salsa jar just came and you're like, oh, you know, we'll just fucking test this out.
Yeah, we'll just put it up on the site. Why not?
Yeah.
That's fucking hilarious.
Yeah, and Tony, our developer, loved the idea. Shout out to Tony, but he was a big fan of like just tinkering with a rental salsa. So the salsa was available for rent at I think around $300 a day.
Do you think you'd ever put that salsa back on there?
Probably not.
I feel like we could get in a lot of trouble if people like start eating it and getting sick.
We might if we get into the salsa rental business, which you know is probably likely.
Yeah, it actually is a niche that is popping up.
It's a good like vertical to jump in. Yeah. So okay, so you've gone with that GH4.
Yeah.
Where did things go from there? Because, I mean, I remember chatting to you and I think you guys did your first gig as Dynamic Visuals during your Year 12 exams.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
both skipped uni straight into business and things really accelerated from there.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Both of us went in with the intention to go to university and I think both Walt and I were really adamant and not even taking a gap year at all. Because we were just like, yeah, let's just get straight into it. I want to do film. You want to do biology. What's there to
muck
with?
I wanted to do a double in film and biology. So I still hadn't quite chosen my pathway. So I was trying to get both.
But then I didn't get into the school I wanted to go in. So I'm like, okay, I'll do a gap year. And then I think...
I got into Clayton.
Yeah.
like Monash Uni, the Clayton campus where they do all their science. And I just didn't want to commute.
For which... degree?
For a double degree in science and arts.
Oh, okay. So you could actually do the film
career. I'm actually like, I originally wanted to do Melbourne Science, didn't get in, got into this double degree and I was like, this is actually fits me better. Found out it was in Clayton and decided to not go because...
just an utter refusal to commute.
I was not going to commute.
My travel was
that
far
for something that I wasn't genuinely that interesting.
Yeah, if you weren't passionate about it, it doesn't make sense. I remember my commute. I went to Swinburne. I did commerce at Swinburne.
Okay, right.
I just missed out on Monash by like half a point or something like that. My brother went to Melbourne. He did the science thing. I don't actually rate Melbourne's model. You have to do a master's of some kind. Well, depending on what area you get into.
You're talking to two people who know very little about
Melbourne model makes you really, like, generalised.
Okay,
because it's very... The undergrad is really broad. Whereas if you go to somewhere like a Monash or Swinburne or something like that, you've got a very specific major, depending on what you end up doing. But, you know, in hindsight, like, if I could have gone straight into a job or working for myself, I would have done that.
Yeah.
Yeah, uni I think is overrated.
Yeah, I think it just wasn't for me personally. Yeah. And we talked about this very early on, starting DV, of like, oh, you know, we have no worry being mature age students at university if this doesn't all work out. Yeah. And like, you know, who knows what happens, but I think we're probably leaning a bit away from that mindset now, the way things are going. But we've never been anti-university. We just fell into...
For you guys just at the time.
Yeah. But I did go to the RMIT enrollment day, like where you just have to give your name and you get your like computer info so you can log into RMIT and like enroll your classes. And that day I was out. I was like, no, I don't like it. Just as soon as they like started calling everyone's name down one by one,
you realize it wasn't for you.
I'm just like, it's just not for me.
So what was the first shoot that you had during the exam period?
There's a few different like alleyways.
We'll talk about our first actual shoot, which was actually in year 11 for a good friend of ours, whose dad owned a business. So we actually did our first job a year before that while still in school. And that was it down at St Kilda Beach, shooting a bunch of two-camera testimonials. We all showed up in, like, green shorts because we wanted to go swimming at the beach afterwards on our first client shoot. But it was really good. We had the road blimp out. There was a lot of wind. No wind sound at all. We had the GH5 on a tripod, so we were doing just a steady cam method with a tripod, which we then ran through warp stabilizer. So looked like a Ronin. Wasn't a Ronin. But yeah, that was...
I think for like the equipment we were working with and our experience level at the time, the shoot actually turned out really well, in my opinion. I think it was a miracle that the audio turned out as good as it did because...
At St Kilda Beach.
Yeah, knowing what I know now about audio, it shouldn't have worked. Yeah, like, there was just way too much wind, but...
Yeah. But it did.
If a client came to us and recommended doing a two-camera piece on St Kilda Beach next to the waves, we'd probably opt to think of a different option.
Yeah, I think about that. Like, even these things, these Rode NTGs, if you got like a big blimp / sound enclosure on it, even that, I reckon, because they pick up so much.
Yeah, you got to get close to the source.
Yeah. And I like St Kilda Beach is notorious because St Kilda Beach is a weird beach if you look at it. Like in comparison to most beaches, it's really vast and it's really like open. There's no real enclosure. Like maybe you've got the break at the yacht club, but
there's no real main area.
No. Like, and there's just wind. It's like a wind valley.
Yeah.
Like
check out St Kilda Beach in real life, GTA Vice City. by the way, we actually found something funny. Since the way that, like, these backlinks work for locations for YouTube videos, our real life GTA Vice City video is on a St Kilda Beach tourism website.
No.
As just, like, see the area. It's so funny.
Because their website is, like, automatically populated.
It's because we put all the location metadata of where our videos were shot in the YouTube descriptions. So in our real life GTA Vice City video, YouTube recognizes it as being filmed in St Kilda.
Right.
So it's like, oh, hey.
Yeah, I wondered how that is actually done because we've only just, like, obviously we published the podcast, but I was wondering because we've started a YouTube channel for myself, how do you get the metadata so that, you know, and obviously I'm guessing it's in the encoding of the actual video when you process it on Premiere Pro or something.
I'm not too sure.
And then YouTube recognizes that.
Yeah, well, you can actually enter in advanced settings in your video description. So you can, like, I don't know about now, but you can literally enter coordinates of, like, a location.
Really?
Like, where was your video shot? And you put coordinates in.
Uh-huh.
And it will recognize that. And when I was younger, I did this with every video, but I never knew where that information was going. I just liked filling out all the information because I couldn't leave anything blank.
Almost makes it, like, more of a movie. Yeah. Like, you have all this data about
the shoot. That's right. It's the same thing as, like, the fascination of long credits. It's, like, all these names. Like, we used to put on, like, camera by Sony, microphone by, because we just like, the more credits, the bigger the production.
Yeah, put in fake roles with just our friends' names. Yeah. Just to, like, beef out the chunk of text.
Our friend Campbell is really talented in music, and still is, isn't it? And we just put, like, Campbell Mowat, sound designer. Never had a role in that.
That's so fucking funny. That is the case, though. When you're younger and when you're starting out, you've got to build up that social proof.
Yeah.
So that was one of the things I had in my notes is what was the learning curve like sort of in that in-between period? You said before, did you shoot this on a GH5 or GH4?
Which one, sorry? Oh, the first
St Kilda thing?
That was probably a week after we bought Walt's GH4. I had already had a GH4 for a few months.
Yeah.
And then Walt realized, damn, this is the best camera ever invented. I need to purchase one. He sold every asset he has
to get it.
That lunch money wasn't going to lunch.
Oh, that was the biggest scam Kieran and I ever did, was getting lunch money from our parents and just hoarding it for camera equipment.
$5 for lunch? That's $5 to the 12
so what
to 35.
What did you do for lunch?
Till you go home.
I know. What we did for lunch was PayPal Domino's because our YouTube earnings came through PayPal.
Oh, that's true.
So we just went to Domino's, Chapel Street.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, okay, tell me about the learning curve from that point to having your first office.
It depends what we classify as first office. Maybe Memphis?
Yeah. Memphis is probably the...
Yeah, I think the learning point was really just in the name learning point. I was just constantly learning new things. Like, I'll speak for myself, but we were literally finding out new things about business, tax, sales, filming, production, emails, like literally everything that you would learn either by doing or learn at university or learn in a role in a workplace. We were just learning it new every day. And we definitely had a lot of hurdles with clients. You know, we faced issues, we faced challenges, faced stress. I think that's actually a big part, especially for me personally. Like, stress is a big factor that you need to learn to mitigate when you're young, doing things yourself, and just making sure that your mental health is in the right space just as much as your business is.
So I think, were there any like standout moments, like a client complaint?
Many.
Oh, yeah. A huge amount. Yeah. Like, at the end of the day, you know, we weren't, in the very beginning of our business, we didn't actually really know what that meant. So we were probably doing things not as...
I think
issues came up, we would resolve them and then make our business slowly more legitimate.
Yeah.
You know?
I think now we're very lucky to have... Like, I can't think of a single one of our clients who we would refer to as, like, someone who's bad to deal with or someone who's annoying. But 3 years ago, that was almost every little job we had, but it was just those jobs that we were getting and they... It was 17, 18. I think a lot of it might have been us being taken advantage of in certain scenarios, but...
And it was probably heightened by the fact that we didn't know how to present ourselves on shoots and in emails and talking to them. So, you know, it creates this, like, leeway for clients to actually push you around a little bit as well.
Yeah.
Not knowing when to say no and not knowing when to say, you know, that's enough and we're not going to do this for you.
Yeah. We had one particular client who was probably our first big client who gave us regular work. And as much as he was sometimes difficult to deal with, he definitely thickened our skin. And we probably owe a lot of credit to the way we interact with people after that, because just knowing how to deal with just a high-stakes situation. Like, at the end of the day, it's business. No one's hating anyone, but definitely, like, grinding out videos, learning how what deliverables are, really managing expectation from, like, a brief standpoint, making sure people know what's going on, and that's all people know what's going on before, you know, production starts.
Yeah.
Knowing what their money will get them is a huge
thing. Yeah, that's the bigger. That's the biggest thing I've learned. I mean, I've got experience from that, working in account management and sales and all that sort of stuff, I don't come from this industry, and so Lauren does, but she's been more on a creative side, and then doing, particularly with video and podcast, there's always like some sort of like little thing that in those first few shoots you've forgotten about. Like, okay, so we'll do this shoot and we'll give you all this footage, but how are you actually going to turn it into something that you can use?
Yeah.
You know, we can offer this, this and this, but some people in the early days, particularly when you're a younger business, they expect that as part of it, or part of what they're paying you.
I think some of the time as well, which might even be of the result of young people such as us just like feeling that that's all we could get. Like, at the time, like, I think a lot of these people who were in meetings with us, like, literally felt that, like, we are, you're lucky enough to even be getting this $500 for 20 videos job. So that was a big part of it as well. But Walt and I had this mindset, and we probably still do, but it's just like, you don't say no to anything when you're starting out. You say yes to everything and you figure it out as you come. And we've had some of our greatest successes come from just those risks of saying yes to things like, maybe we can't do this, but then we did it really well, and then we can actually show for that for the next project. So,
and it's also, if we hadn't been saying yes all this time, you know, we'd still be making mistakes that we kind of ironed out in those first initial cheaper jobs.
I think, like, we just sent it. You just gotta,
Well, what do you think was the biggest mistake that you guys learnt from in those early days?
That's a good question.
That's actually a really good question.
Probably just the whole knowing your value. I guess the mistake would be, like, undervaluing yourself.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't even call it a mistake, because if we never did that...
You wouldn't have known.
Yeah, like, I believe everything happens for a reason. So, like, I just fit, But I don't know. I'm sure there's an answer.
Yeah. Maybe
maybe some of our purchases. Like, there are factual mistakes we have made.
Yeah, yeah. I can say these camcorders were factually a bad mistake. Like, so these are like about, I think they were $8.90 when we bought them about 2 years ago or a year ago. And I look at like the Panasonic Lumix G7, and it's still cheaper than these. And
there's
so
always
much better.
Something better. There's always something better.
But you
better.
Don't know until you really like go out and try stuff out.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, like we, those guys, Mike, Liam, you know, let's call them the Eggplant Gang. They would get questions all the time about what should I do here, what should I do there.
Yeah.
And they're always procrastination questions.
Yeah.
Because you just gotta, you have to make mistakes.
Yeah, you do.
You've gotta know. It's like when people win the lottery and they blow that lottery money within like the first year because they've not felt what it like, what it was like to earn that money.
Yeah.
They didn't feel the pain associated with it.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
I think it's also just like, as well as like earning it, it's just that was something that we definitely made a mistake was when we first used to get money, since we didn't have like good cash flow at the beginning, we'd just get like lumps of cash, which seemed really big to us at the time. But we'd just get that money and instantly spend it on something. I think that was a mistake because it really didn't give us good structure throughout the year in terms of money. But then again, the stuff that we're spending that money on was all the equipment that we now rent out. So it's like, have we learned from our mistake? Who knows?
I think, going into that as well, what we talk about a lot was a certain era of our business, which was early 2019, where we did quite well in 2018. But then since in the video production industry, in the media space, it's quite often to be paid months after you finish something.
Yeah, it's a notorious problem.
We got a bunch of money and we thought we were in the mindset of, damn, our business is going so great. We're working out of Walt's dad's bedroom. We have no expenses. This is awesome. But then we were in that mindset for like 3 months, so we weren't actually growing the business in that time. And then after all that money had come, and as Walt said, after we had spent, even though a lot of it was spent on things that we needed, it was just like, oh, damn, even though you're making money, you still need to be in the mindset of growing the business, like, because the money's not going to last forever.
Yeah.
And that's been a big learning experience, especially with cash flow, managing employees, like all that sort of thing. It's so important to not blow all your money so quickly.
Where's your mindset around sales pipelines now? Like, I guess I'm curious, in the early beginnings, how were you selling people and getting new deals versus how are you doing it now?
Yeah, it's definitely changed over the years.
As an example for us, it was all just network at the start.
Same.
And then now it's sort of a combination of network and running paid media.
I think for Dynamic Visuals, at least, we've been extremely fortunate that a lot of our work speaks for itself. So we started by reaching out to our like extended network, just feeling out, being like, hey, do you know anybody that needs video, blah, 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 kind of working on that. And that kind of led to a lot of jobs, that led to a lot of referrals. And then it got to the point where we had all this work, we were doing heaps of work, and Kieran had been working really hard on our, you know, SEO.
Yeah.
So we started popping up on page 2 of Google, and we're just starting to get calls now, you know.
Yeah. Just organic calls.
Yeah, all organic. It's so they just go onto our website, and we have so much, you know, work that kind of speaks for our quality that now most of it is calls.
Yeah. So we've spent $15 in total on sales, and that was for like a brief Instagram ad, something like that. But yeah, as Walt said, it's all network. And I think the whole time we were passionate about the videos we're making. So it sort of just happens naturally.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're at the point now, 3.5 years after, where we've been chipping away at our portfolio and SEO for so long that it's now starting to come up very high with no paid money for engagement. And we are starting to get like 1 to 2 calls every couple days of just like, hey, I need a job, let's do this. And that didn't happen at all for 3 years.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, that stuff takes time. It's like building out the actual website through not just SEO, but social proof.
Yeah.
You get small jobs.
Yeah.
Having case studies.
Yeah.
You guys have got good case studies on your website.
Yes. Oh, something we actually have learned as well, which is another huge learning factor that I think we both were amazed by, is like Since, and this plays into the fact that we're in Richmond. This was a decision why we got here. We're surrounded by all these agencies, all these production companies who now rent some equipment from us, things like that. So these guys over the road from us who are really lovely to work with.
This is hot glue.
This is hot glue.
Yeah, we've got Nick coming in, well, not for ages, not till October.
Oh, well, that's awesome. Yeah. Well, yeah, we're very, I admire hot glue a lot.
Yeah, I'm a big fan.
I think what they've done is awesome.
Yeah.
And they're lovely people to rent equipment from. But just hearing about bigger production companies and agencies and just seeing how they've grown and how they've gotten clients and just talking to people who have done the same thing has helped a lot. So just like being willing to communicate and talk to other people in your same industry helps, which we didn't really do for 3 years. Like the first industry people we sort of started meeting were Liam and Mike, who were sort of in the same position.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
That's fascinating.
So it's learning, it's talking with people in your same industry. Yeah, a lot.
Do you think like between the two of you guys as co-founders, what sort of the traits that you guys lean on each other for? Like I'm clearly more of a strategy and salesperson and Lauren is clearly more of a creative
production type. Yeah.
So for you guys, what's that split?
Well, like? The very, very first thing, which sounds like a joke, but I've got the worst memory. I have like such a shocking memory. Like it's got so bad that Kieran's turned up to the office with just like those Swiss multivitamins, like memory, and he just put them down on my desk. I'm like, oh, is this for the office? I no, it's for you. I'm like, oh, okay, sick.
Do you know I've got a book for you?
Oh,
this is a notorious. I was started reading this, so this is like by a grandmaster of memory. I don't know if the audience can see this. So it's called Unlimited Memory by Kevin Horsley. Memory is actually a really fucking easy thing to get good at. It's just having a process.
Yeah.
And this book is not one of those bullshit type books where they fluff around for 500 pages. It's 150 pages.
Oh, perfect.
It's a very easy read.
Keep me interested.
So I started reading it and realized, okay, I'm already doing a lot of this. I've got a very good memory. Lauren's got a shocking memory.
Right.
And I think she needs to read that as well.
Interesting. Wow.
That's a great recommendation.
Yeah. So most things when it comes to memory is like, is how you pair memories to something that is memorable. Sounds ridiculous, but like when you think of a moment, do you pair that moment with something unique that happened in that moment? And that's really how my memory works and why I've got a good memory is it's what they call mnemonics.
Yeah.
So like if you come up with if you're trying to learn like a language, like one of the examples in here was, it's so naff, by the way. Beautiful. Like all the examples are...
Love that.
Is super naff. Like here's a thing with French words. So book is liver and live in French. Sounds like liver. So you can imagine opening a book and finding squashed liver inside.
Mm.
So that's like little mnemonic traits like that is how you start to build up your memory.
Yeah. That's just to keep going on that though.
Yeah, what were we talking about?
I think there is actually real different traits between us that help though. I think I'm the one to tend to just be like hectic and want to do everything like right now and like make it happen. And Walt's very reserved and more analytical. It's probably just like he has more of a sciencey brain and I have more of a whatever brain is. But like, and I think that helps a lot. I think if we were the same personality type,
it wouldn't work.
You'd
clash.
Yeah, I think it would be really bad, but it's really helpful. Like, I just don't really deal with the numbers of things when we're planning shoots, but I deal with the logistics.
Yeah.
But then Walt sort of puts that into reality and like...
Well, that's what I was going to say is Kieran's really good for attention to detail, which is really, really good for actually like really narrowing down certain parts of videos and getting that like extra little touch, which like the average person may not like actually see, but gives it a big psychological, like kind of subconscious difference in my opinion, at least.
And I think it's also blossomed even more so with Share Gear now. Like Walt is into bikes, into mechanics. he is into engineering. So when it comes to camera, like if he needs to change a PL mount to an EF mount, if we need to fix a camera, like just having that ability of having someone more hands-on on the technological side helps a lot, because I'm just, that's just not how I work. Like we've had like cameras and battery chargers break on set, and Walt just whips out the red tool, fixes it, and then we keep going. But like I can't do that; the shoot would be over.
So that there's a lot of similarities between Laura and I. You've got to have traits that complement each other.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're sort of fucked.
Yeah.
When
you're
speaking to a client.
Yeah.
And you're like, and then if you're both are like, oh, I don't know what to do in this scenario, that's sort of the worst.
And I think we're very lucky as well to play onto that, to work in an environment where you're surrounded by people as well who have all of their own characteristics as well.
Yeah.
So our colleagues, not colleagues, they're working on their own businesses, but we all work in our office. So Tristan Cole is a good friend of ours. Completely different industry, completely different personality, but it gives so much value just to be able to cross-contaminate with all these. Obviously not now.
Sharing jobs.
But then our another guy works in our office, Mark Kabakian, a really talented filmmaker and director.
Very memorable name.
And I believe that like you are the five people you hang around with, and I think that's helped us both so much in a business and personal space. Just like if we need some CSS code done on our website, Tristan's there.
Yeah.
If we need to know how to make a quick storyboard, Mark's there. He's a graduated 3-year VCA graduate. Like we just, and that's really helpful.
Yeah.
If Mark needs to know, you know, how to do his tax return, we're there. We know how to do that now. So I think both of Walt and I are being different and our differences helping our business. It's like the people we're working with, even though they're not working for DV or working for ShareGear, but just having that environment is so helpful, I think.
Yeah. Let's talk about like principally the two businesses. So you obviously started off as Dynamic Visuals.
Yeah.
And particularly in the last year, ShareGear has come around. I remember when Liam and Mike were promoting it because they'd done like a shoot on an ARRI or something like that.
Yep.
So what's sort of like the thesis around the business? I understand it, but I guess I'm, and I've got my own opinion on why you're doing it. Yep. The obvious thing to me is vertical integration. It's really smart because I think that's where like the media industry is going.
Yep.
And the greatest example of this would probably actually be in America, like VaynerMedia. They literally own media assets. They own creative. They own production.
Yep.
Like the whole supply chain.
Yeah. Yep.
Which compresses all your costs down. You've got massive controls over what you can do. So I guess I'm curious from your guys' perspective, when did you start to realize that this could become another business and that you wanted to launch it?
Well,
it's an interesting story.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah, it is an interesting story. I think I just at the crux of it though. That like you're talking about like vertical integration and how it's like a great way to like kind of like generate more, you know, money, you know, playing into your own industry, becoming a little bit of a powerhouse, doing everything sort of thing. But I feel like it was initially, at least for me, really driven with passion.
Yeah, same. Little secret, it was formerly known as Dynamic Rentals.
Yeah.
The business was registered, the brand was there, and we were like, Dynamic, it's a brand. Dynamic Visuals. Dynamic Photography, Dynamic Rentals.
Dynamic Animations.
Dynamic Animations. So
Earth Source. We won't get into that.
So, yeah. But the rentals has always been in our idea. Even when we were in, like, first year out of school, when we each had a couple lenses and cameras lying around, it was already, like, this is too much tech for what we actually need. We just have what our fantastic client and friend Cameron calls GAS, gear acquisition syndrome, where we just loved buying cameras and it got a bit out of hand.
I'm at that stage at the moment.
It's an addiction. I mean, like, it's, I genuinely remember, like, at school, even before we had conceived the idea of running a production company, we're like, man, imagine if we could shoot on a RED. And it's like, dude, imagine if we could run a camera rental company and then we could shoot on whatever we wanted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now it's like starting to get to that point. And now it's like you walk downstairs and you're like, I actually don't know what I want to shoot on.
Yeah, you suffer from that not decision fatigue, but like the things that you guys have at your, you know, pleasure is quite amazing.
Yeah. And it was our office that we're currently in now was always rentals in mind. So all of our previous iterations of my mum's spare room office, Walt's dad's spare room office, this co-working space in Abbotsford office, like all of these locations, none of them were viable for rentals because it was a lot of money of equipment in these residential areas. You know, to be a rental company, you need a lot, it takes a lot of work. So we were always wanting to start it. It had to wait.
Yeah.
And we also had to grow DV. We had to feed ourselves. Like,
yeah.
So
in hindsight, do you think that you would have gone down this road of getting into the rental business?
I think initially, yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like it's always been like part of the plan.
So it's always sort of been there.
Yeah. We registered the business name, Dynamic Rentals, just so we spent the money and be like, okay, now we have to start it. We spent that $36 on the registration fee. But there's no going back.
Yeah. So why Shager and not Dynamic Rentals?
Shager, it's in the name. Yeah. Shager.
Yeah.
How could you not?
Yeah. Dynamic Rentals is just...
So who changed whose mind on the name?
I think both of us were like Dynamic Rentals.
Yeah, I don't actually remember.
We're not sure.
Trust me not to remember.
Yeah, but it just became the decision, I think, of us wanting to make it a different business because we did sort of want to make it like, as we said, dynamic animations, photography, visuals. But then we're just like, you know what, this works better. Shaggy is an awesome name. I can't believe this Instagram name is free.
Yeah.
Can't believe the YouTube name's free. Can't believe the Twitter name's free.
Yeah.
All and that stuff.
I think to touch on like making it a separate business, Shaggy is trying to be a little bit more automated than a lot of other rental companies, as well as way more automated than our own dynamic visuals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't think that is one of your key competitive advantages.
Yeah.
Is you've made it very simple.
It's good to note as well. Shaggear is in early access. We're constant. It's us at DV 3 years ago. We are very new to making software. We're very new to
user experience on sites,
having customers. Like, it's a complete different business. It's essentially a retail business.
Yeah.
Having customers come into your place to sign something, seeing their face, you know, just it's a whole different way of interacting with your client. Well, literally goal opposites to David.
Yeah, I was going to say, even just going from the people that used to rent for bigger jobs and you always have to ask so many questions, just going to like, now you're meant to be the expert. These people were like just messaging you being like, what am I shooting with? What does this do? What does this mean? And you're like, damn, like, you know?
Yeah. So we have a long road ahead of us for Shaggear. It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
But yeah, we have so many plans for it. It's really exciting.
I think
we're in our MVP at this stage. Yeah, okay. Minimum viable.
And the thing from this point onwards is like, how does a business, like that expand? How do you maximize returns without becoming too like the competition? Because I think what you guys have done really well and what allows you to give the good pricing model is you sort of got that Shopify niche approach. It looks like a really nice Shopify site. It's very clear.
Thank you.
Whereas like I remember when we were first getting into this space of doing video, and we'd look at like renting equipment versus a production team for a shoot.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, a lot of the other websites are just so convoluted. There's just so much going on.
Yeah.
But it, you know, you mentioned before about having all this gear and I noticed, so you guys convinced me in a good way to go with, so we got the Sony A7R4 that just came.
Oh, there it is, a Sony camera.
And we got the Canon.
I saw it on
Canon
your
glass.
Story. That's the 24-70. Yeah. I've never seen it.
Yeah, so we went with the Canon glass. So you made a really good point to me that you guys should always be future-proofing, but also looking at your equipment as a tool rather than, because people get really stuck into, oh, I love this brand or I love this or that. And that can happen in like the mobile device world as well, but cameras are a bit better in that it's a bit more modular. And so, yeah, I guess I'm curious to hear your thoughts and general principles around different tools for different jobs. And how that's better than just, you know, the I don't know, if, what's the saying? It's like, to a man with a hammer, everything looks like a nail.
Yeah.
Have you heard that saying?
Right.
I've heard it.
It's like if you've got, if you're an economist, you just always see things through being an economist.
Right. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Right.
So, I feel like your approach is a lot more solution-focused as opposed to niche-focused.
Yeah, I think, like, one thing that we've kind of learned through being, you know, just hobbyists to, you know, being in dynamic visuals, doing bigger productions, now to also going into share gear, we have a good understanding of what equipment is actually useful and necessary for your needs in all sorts of situations.
Yeah. At the end of the day, it all comes down to what is your application.
Yeah.
So us as Dynamic Visuals running a production company would be so different to me as Kieran being a freelancer, or me as Kieran being a freelancer who does photography and video.
Or say, for instance, even you who...
Does podcasts.
You know?
So the equipment has to play into what you're using it for. But still, it still does, like, yeah. There's no right answer. There's no right answer.
It's just, like, infinite solutions to any sort of situation, I guess.
Yeah.
But
we can certainly, you tell us who you are and what you're doing, and we'll recommend you the dream kit, for whatever your budget is.
That's fucking good.
I was
just intrigued around just moving away from the gear rental business, like storytelling.
Yeah.
You know, I find the way you guys go about things quite interesting when it comes to shooting video.
Yeah.
Mm. Like you said before, Kieran's definitely like a guy who just wants to get in there. When he was there on the shoot, he just wanted to get straight into it and start shooting stuff.
Yeah.
I remember this, like, there was one moment where they were, do you remember, like, the photography people were taking photos and you were just like, checking things out, and they're just like,
They're like, don't look at my lightroom.
I remember that was so fucking funny.
Yeah.
Because I thought, like, that is such a cliche, like, photographer response, but anyway, I guess I'm curious from your perspective, how do you guys think about telling stories?
Yeah, this is another thing that has been such a learning curve, because I think what we've learned from Mark especially is that a benefit of film school as a specific is, like, it really does have a great focus on storytelling and growing that as a skill in yourself. So I think our storytelling ability has sort of been developed over time, realizing that story is a lot more important than we thought. In 2016, you know, we probably thought that a cool as stabilized shot upscaled to 8K in 10-bit was cooler than, like, a beginning, middle and end story. But now I think we have a different opinion, and that just has been learned by doing. We didn't go to a film school. We weren't taught really, like, I think I was taught more about the importance of story by Hayden Pedersen than anyone I know.
Really?
And as well as clients we've worked with, like, and most of all seeing our work, actually. Like, if we look at videos that we've done with Cameron 3 years ago versus videos that we've done with now, like, our whole approach going into it is, yes, all this equipment is dope and look at this lighting setup we did, but we,
like, how does it actually aid?
Yeah, it's so much more important now for our focus to be on story, which it wasn't to begin with. And I think that was also of us getting into filmmaking from a very visual effects background.
Mm.
So, like we learned to do, you know, 3D explosions before.
Yeah.
We learned to do an emotional tight conversation scene.
The thing that made you guys really well known, I think, back to it now and how I saw it before I even knew Liam and Mike, was the Call of Duty in real life.
Yeah, it's crazy. Everyone we meet says that a lot, but they have actually seen those videos before meeting us and they're like, wait, you did that?
Yeah, it is. That is really funny. So that was, like, your initial, the initial step into storytelling was copying other stories and making it in a likeness.
Yeah.
And do you think, like, with Mark and Hayden, was there anything in particular that you learned from them? Like, as an example, you probably can't see it here, but on the desk I've got there's a book by Joseph Campbell called The Hero with a Thousand Faces, and it's sort of like the book on telling stories.
Right.
George Lucas read it before he made Star Wars. Like, all those film school types always go on about it. Was there anything like that in particular?
I don't think necessarily anything stand out. I think it's more just, like, a way for us... Because I think one thing that, just to tie back to how we've done storytelling is, you know, we would, during our YouTube days, we would turn up to set with some equipment and a couple props and be like, okay, what's the story we're going to make? And we'll just come up with it, like,
on the spot.
Which I think really aided us in the early days for lower budget videos for clients because, you know, even though it wasn't a masterpiece, we could come up with something on the day no matter what.
Yeah. There was a common joke going around at school because the channel was called KBW Studios before. And all of our friends, like if you're a friend of Walt or me or any of the other, you know, shout out to Louis, Walt, Campbell, Addy, Kamal, Rod, everyone, shout out to
Sanjay.
But everyone was in a KBW Studios at one point and the common gag was like, no story, no worries. You know, you show up at a car park with a few fake props and
figure it out.
And that's what you do. And that's you figure it
doesn't
out.
Doesn't matter.
But I think the...
But, like, to go on from what I was saying, I think a lot of what they've kind of helped us with is taking our time to stop and actually materialize our ideas before we just go out and do it. Which I think has been a really big thing and definitely aided us in some of our better produced videos is actually stopping and
planning it.
Just not winging it.
Another thing I think is important is we've learnt more to play to our strengths, which is something that you really learn in university and film school. It's like, do you want to be a director? Do you want to be a cinematographer? Do you want to be a production manager? Do you want to be an editor? Do you want to be a visual effects editor? Like, there's so many roles, but learning that for the opportunity when we have to do bigger shoots, like let's bring in an additional camera operator, let's bring in a gaffer, let's get this music originally composed, like just taking yourself away from the process a bit. And me, like, I know I'm probably best on camera, Walt is probably best on visual effects and sound, and then, you know, people we know are obviously, we're not going to do an original music composition, but we could try. But just taking a step back and really playing to your strengths, getting more people involved can really make a project shine so much.
Yeah.
And I think hiring a full-time editor last year, Jasper, who's a great friend of ours now and was our first sort of employee, really helped us in learning that even more so, because there was a period of 12 months where we just stopped editing and we're like, oh wow, we can just put so much more time into these particular things. So all of our video projects, Walt only did the motion graphics, like the VFX, because all the edit was done and all the filming was done. But a year prior to that, we'd be doing everything. And
as business owners over time, you're going to have to get to a point where you're no longer as much in the day-to-day of working in the business.
Absolutely.
But, you know, you're still really young and you're still in the early years of the business, so you can, you've got the freedom to do it.
Yeah. I think as employers, I would never employ someone for DV who couldn't do camera and editing and all of it, because I think it's very common for someone, a film school graduate or not, like, if you're into film, you probably know how to use Premiere, you probably know how to, you know, operate a camera, you might even know how to do some sound or some VFX tricks. But Jasper, like, not only was he a fantastic editor, he had camera operation abilities, he had producer abilities, so we could sort of structure our shoots and our roles dependent on the strengths of all the people. So it helps so much, and the quality, just like, it's incredible seeing the quality once you have, like, people do their own thing. It's
when you're not spread thin.
Yeah.
And I also think, like, hiring from here on out, I'm never going to hire someone that isn't better than me in at least a couple of the...
Yeah, they have to.
Otherwise, what's the point? Otherwise, you get trapped in always doing it yourself, even though they're there.
Or teaching too much.
That was difficult to overcome, especially with Jasper, just seeing a different person with your footage, with your work. And, like, you know, just being like, oh, it's. I really want to say this, but I understand why he did that. And that was like, and that was a great thing about Jasper, which I think was great for us, was if we said, like, oh, let's move that shot, but he'd actually go into the explanation of why he put that there And he's like, oh, Jasper's actually coming from a story perspective, whereas we just thought this dolly shot looked cooler. Mm. So just it's really important to just learn that you need to listen to other people and that filmmaking is a collaborative process.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
we never really learned that because it was always Walt and I from age 15 to now. Just doing yeah. everything
And that'll
ourselves.
Be the hardest thing for you guys is learning to step back.
Mm.
It's going to be very hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I was curious, there was, I mean, obviously COVID's been going on, right?
It has.
I've noticed that, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if you've noticed that. So
honestly, when you're just sitting in front of like an editing bay, like you almost don't notice.
You don't.
You just...
Particularly in our business, because our business is more of a creative business, so we've got a lot of work like website design stuff and just creative design. You
yeah.
don't have to be out in the field as much.
Mm.
And to be honest, not much has changed. And apart from, like we were talking before, that Feb-March period where things
yeah,
really
yeah.
went down.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's weird how used to being inside you can be.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've noticed that.
Yeah.
Like Monday, I've had to force myself to leave the house.
Oh,
now,
really? Wow.
Still.
Yeah.
Because yeah, the studio's here in the house.
Yeah.
So, video production. I think Kieran, you mentioned when we did the shoot that largely you guys have been all right
yeah.
and unaffected.
Yep.
Mm.
What have you noticed over the last few months since February?
In terms of our industry in particular?
Yeah.
Well, a lot of our industry has been shut down just because much larger productions can't have that many people on set.
Yeah.
Which means yeah. everything was paused on that front.
Yeah.
In terms of our productions that we were working on, everything kind of just got postponed, which
right,
means
yeah.
so we did have a significant drop in revenue over the few months, but as restrictions were lifting, we just got that whole back order of video that we've been crunching out like crazy recently, so we've
yep.
pretty much made up for it.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So none of it was actually cancelled, and we actually got more work because a lot of small business is going online.
Yeah.
And you need cameras to do that.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Well, it's funny you mention that because I remember when March hit and we'd started advertising for our website design, and it's like the entirety of Melbourne needed a fucking website overnight.
Mm.
It was crazy how many people were calling up and emailing us for quotes.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was absolutely wild because that was the only way to do business.
Yeah.
It was video and websites.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting seeing the different ways that all the different industries that we work with have reacted. Like, we've done videos for the health industry, the public art gallery industry, the
mm.
education industry, the finance industry, and they've all sort of modified their operations in different ways because of it, as have we. So
yeah.
it's interesting times, but we're just going with the flow.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. And I've had three separate rentals clients that, you know, I've been talking to, and they're all like, yeah, we sit down and we edit iPhone footage all day now. Our clients that need constant uploads that we use to produce for them, they just have to send in iPhone footage.
Yeah.
Wow.
And we just edit that all day.
It's the iPhone grind.
Damn.
Yeah.
You know?
That's fucking funny. I'm curious for you guys, like, during this whole period, so I know that, like, Feb, March, we had to sit down and go, okay, we need to really think about our business model, and we need
yeah.
to also compress a lot of the stuff that we'd already planned for the next 6 months ahead and push it into a month,
yeah.
which we're able to largely achieve. So I guess for you guys, like during that period, did you look at anything around strategy or planning? And
definitely on the share gear side, I'd say yes. But for DV, it was sort of a small opportunity just to edit and just keep that, like, not have meetings or shoots, just get our backlog completed, which is, we did have a big backlog.
Did you? Okay.
So we probably, like, I started, Walt was coming into the office just solo, and I was working from home for that lockdown period. And we just had a big backlog, finished the backlog, and then maybe we had a week or so of, like, not much really going on.
Yeah.
So on the DV front, it was, like, quite calm, but still a lot of work to do.
I feel like the most strategy that went into that was just choosing where to spend the money that was kind of sitting in the bank.
Yeah.
Just being like, are we going to be paying this or should we hold it out for this, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. What's happening with rent, you know, all that. Like,
so. Yeah, that was an interesting one because did you, like, landlords, were they quite receptive? Because I know there was another business I was saying they've got a similar shaped or size office to you, but they're in Abbotsford.
Yeah.
And I think they got, like 50% off because they couldn't actually be, because they've got such a big team.
Yeah, our landlord's been fantastic.
Such a legend.
Really, really good.
Before we even inquired, we just received a letter from our landlord being like, we are pausing all rent.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So
never shout out to our landlord. She's been wonderful. Very lucky to have someone like that.
Do you guys have like a direct contact with your landlord? Or is it done through an agent?
No, it's done through an agent. Yeah. So this was the first time that we had ever actually been in contact with our actual landlord.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it was just them saying, we've paused all rent.
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
So, yeah, it's been... but still with pausing rent, the rent's still coming. So
you've
got to keep that in mind. But, yeah, I think if you're going to be... in any country when COVID's happening, Australia's probably up there with the country you want to be in. We've been very lucky with what's been going on, I think.
Oh, yeah. I think...
especially running a small business.
So we did a video on the ATO cash flow boost for my YouTube channel, and we spoke about how I think Australia is third largest or maybe second largest in the world for monetary assistance.
Wow.
I think only to the UK and Germany.
Yeah.
And we were something like, at least until May, June, the lowest cases per capita in the world.
Yeah.
So, and it still is. I mean, yeah, we've got a second surge here in Melbourne happening in these little pocket areas.
Yeah.
But if you still compare it to the US or Europe, like, we're cruising.
Yeah.
So, I think we've been very lucky.
Yeah, we have.
I think I was saying to you guys at the cafe that this has actually been, initially it was a very worrying period, but we've actually probably done better than I would have expected.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Same. So initially for us, it was extremely worrying.
Yeah.
And it was for everyone in our office, not just us who were working. We were like, damn. Yeah. Like our friend had a huge run on a big TV station to do camera operation for like 20 weeks. Our other friend had a big contract, like all this stuff was happening. And we were, I don't know, you said you were worried we were going to lose the office.
Our cash flow at that exact moment when everything went into lockdown was not fantastic.
Yeah.
Just because we're waiting on a lot of invoices and it was just like, these invoices aren't due for a while. If we are going to be paying rent, like we're going to fall behind pretty quickly.
Yeah. The rent saved us definitely for that month or two.
Yeah, for sure.
Very lucky.
Yeah, I think the thing that's saved us was the... Well, I don't think we really needed saving, but I would... Like, if things had continued as they were in Feb, March, I would have been shitting myself.
Yeah.
Mm. We were just lucky that we had a consistent retainer client and the JobKeeper thing was enough to pay for Lauren's salary, essentially.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If we had an office, we would have been in real trouble.
Yeah.
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 We just weren't at that stage.
Yeah, it's been lucky, I think, our industry. Like, my brother works in a cafe and they're still not open. So I can imagine difficult it is for him. So
why is that? That's interesting to me because we went down to the cafe and they sort of did this in-between phase. We were buying like pasta bakes from them.
His isn't open just because it's right in the middle of the banking district in the CBD. Only people who go there are like ANZ workers and everyone's been working from home. So they might get, you know, they might still make or have 20 customers in a day, but that's nothing compared to what they would have had when you're in the middle of the Monday to Friday banking grind.
Mm.
You'd have hundreds, if not thousands, maybe, of people coming in a day.
What do you reckon the next, you know, if you think about the future, what does the next 6 to 18 months look for you guys? What are you thinking about at the moment?
Interesting. I'm thinking about like really like cleaning up our website, making that user experience like just absolutely seamless, making sure like you can go on the site, rent a camera, it's affordable, it's going to be shipped to your door real quick. Really polish that up and let it become its own standalone thing that can...
Yeah, the experience has to be as good as the product itself, the cameras, like... But yeah, big focus on just the usability, Yeah.
And then also in terms of DV, just we've got a few bigger shoots coming up that, you know, we're excited about.
Very excited, yeah.
So I think they're the two biggest ones.
Yeah, yeah.
In the next 6 months.
Whatever.
In the next 6 months.
Yeah. Are they, these the two? Oh, in the next six months.
Yeah, the next two things that at least I'm pretty focused on.
I thought you were talking about these were like the biggest shoots that you guys had ever done.
Yes, technically, for one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What would you define as a big shoot?
Something that takes more than 3 months, I would say. A big shoot can't just be like a big filming day. It's like the production itself has to be. It's a lot of pre-production, a lot of production, a lot of post-production, a lot of changes between the client or the distribution, if that's like the whole operation has to be big. We've definitely had shoots where we've had like 2 weeks out filming in the middle of nowhere.
I mean, a big shoot would have been getting sent to the US for 3 weeks to film non-stop.
Forgot about that whole thing.
You know, so that's, you know, a fairly big shoot.
Who was that for again?
So that was for an app that doesn't exist anymore, but it was a startup in Melbourne.
Because I saw that on the website.
Yeah.
And I was like shot in LA. I'm like, whoa, fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, Walt and I, a good friend of ours, Meg, who also used to work with us, got flown to America for 3 weeks. We went to Maine, we went to Los Angeles, we went to Oregon, and then we went to a few other places in between, and we were filming and editing every single day of that trip on the road. I was driving a V8 Volvo with our camera gear in the back. We had just bought our Red Raven. It was good fun.
I learned how to knit on that trip.
Yeah.
Just thought I'd...
Why knitting?
It was for a knitting company, believe it or not. Right. A knitting startup.
Yeah. But that experience was insane. Walton... It was so crazy. Walt and I were... We rented an Airbnb on Sunset Boulevard for like half a week and we're playing pool. It was going to Six Flags, like...
Have this been the first time you've both been to the US?
For me, it was, but...
No, that was maybe my third time.
Right.
Yeah.
America's one of the only places I've not been to.
Oh, really? Yeah.
In terms of continents.
It was quite... Yeah, actually, driving over in the car today, I have a CD in my car who was given to me by a guy on Venice Beach, he's like, hey man, I have my CD. I'm like, oh, thanks so much. He's like, so you got $20? Yeah. Anyway, so he conned me into buying his CD, but we were listening to it on the way here. But just only in LA will you like meet those people and like just hustling out on Venice Beach, giving out his CDs for free, and then trying to get people to pay for them.
Damn.
But being in Los Angeles on like a job with our like new Red camera, it was quite surreal, the whole thing.
That would be sick.
Because it's a dream for any filmmaker to go to LA, I think. Mm. So just being like out just on the street in Burbank filming was like crazy.
Yeah, just 3 weeks of expenses paid for while you're also, you know, getting to film in interesting locations and it was actually just a dream.
Did you guys get a moment to sort of take a break outside of California or see anywhere else?
So the California trip was our break. So we were filming for the whole 3 weeks or whatever it was. And then we had, I think, 3 days at the very end, which was our break. So we had no break the entire time.
But that was meant to be a shoot as well.
That was, oh yeah.
So we booked a flight to LA for the final 3 days. And whoever we were filming cancelled. So we just had 3 days at the end in LA.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Our client that we're with flew home.
Yeah.
So it was just Karen and I roaming the streets of LA for 3 days.
Yeah.
That's sick.
It was crazy. We had some crazy times. So we also met a guy that we had known online on YouTube in Portland, Oregon for the first time in real life.
That's cool.
So it's actually a guy who helped me manage my YouTube channel when I went away at school camp. And we met through Xbox Live.
Oh my God.
So Walt and I, shout out to a bus.
Xbox Live.
Yeah, so Walt and I went and met him. That was crazy. And then... Yeah, just really, really interesting experiences. Also just interesting, like, doing our job in a different country.
Yeah.
And managing, moving equipment internationally.
Yeah. Going through TSA.
That would have been interesting.
Going through TSA with Red camera, just seeing what that looks like. Like, you get some weird comments.
Because you have to carry all the batteries on your carry-on. Yeah. We carried all, like, the really high-value items with us just in case.
Yeah.
So it was Kieran and I walking through with two bags each, like front backpack, back backpack. Yeah. You open it up and then you have to take, they tell you to take everything out. So you have to like pull out the camera, pull out batteries, pull out this, pull out that,
and
pull out
microphones. And since Red Camera's a modular, the camera was like 10 pieces anyway. So you've got to like...
There's so many lines behind you and you're just like absolutely scrambling while they're like...
Taking your shoes off as well because you got to take your shoes off in America. And
right, so to, to go through their security check... They and because they saw what you guys had, they'd make you take out.
Just it's just like it took a long time, and we were just doing so many flights. Like we were never in one spot for more than 3 days.
Yeah.
So many flights.
Yeah, it would have been a fucking amazing experience.
It was great fun. Yeah, we're very lucky and thankful to who made it possible. So you know who you are.
All right, I want to get into some rapid fire questions to finish you guys off.
Beautiful.
What is your morning and evening routine look like?
Wake up, black coffee, go to the office, and then evening routine is, I'll give you, like, I need to go to sleep with at least 15 minutes of YouTube. I watch 15 minutes of YouTube, and then I can finally fall asleep.
Interesting.
Oh, wait, sorry, my morning routine, hold on, I'm slowing this question down. Wake up, shower, black coffee, office, there you go.
Yeah.
My morning is like peppermint tea and then like rush out the door. Night routine at the moment has been consisting of watching criminal psychology case study videos on YouTube, which have been so interesting.
What's the channel called?
JCS. Yes. Incredible.
I'm intrigued just from like an interviewing perspective.
Incredible.
Because it's really good. Like, I'm intrigued by body language and stuff like
likewise.
That.
Likewise. It's so cool.
God, man, there's some fucking horrifying individuals out in the world.
Yeah.
Jesus.
That shit is intense.
Like awful thing to watch right before bed.
My nightly routine.
It's just fascinating.
Yeah. Nightly routine constantly changing.
Yeah. But also, like, the strategies that really good... educated cops will use on these people and how they genuinely believe that they can get away with what they did.
Yeah.
But then also when there are, I don't know if you saw the recent one, do you remember the story of that guy in, it was somewhere in the Carolinas, might have been North or South Carolina, and he was obsessed with this girl at the college and then he killed her and like dismembered her body and stuff. And he, there's something obviously wrong with him. And but the police were like local police and they had no idea what they were doing interview wise.
Right.
And their strategies were useless and he was really, really weird. And like when they interviewed him, he just when he knew that he'd been found out, he went all of a sudden into like he would just only have three answers. Yes, no, I don't know.
Right.
And he was just like always had this gaze like No. I don't know. Like, that was literally all that he... It was so strange.
And
he didn't break it the entire time.
Wow. Yeah.
So...
Very interesting videos.
Super, super interesting. Yeah. All right. Best purchase under $200 that you've been able to use during this period. And you could have made the purchase outside or inside.
In COVID period.
During sort of lockdown periods.
Oh, right. Yeah. Interesting. On a personal side, I would say video games.
Okay. Any game in particular?
Yeah, a few. The lockdown gave me a good time to just like play some of the games I never played. So Red Dead Redemption 2, Far Cry 5. I finally played after never playing. Loved both of them. On a business side, under $200.
Yeah. Doesn't have to. I'm thinking more personal.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's personal.
Video games. Bought anything under $200.
So there's like a tool or something for the bike.
Yeah, all over $200.
A red tool.
Really?
Red tool.
Yeah, they're pretty expensive.
Red tool.
Yeah, what is this red tool thing that you mentioned earlier?
So the Red Sidewinder is a little product that Red make, and it's just like a multi-tool, but it's just so good. You don't need to own a Red camera to use one for a few of the things you do.
But it's very just handy. Useful because it like has every kind of standard size tool for most camera equipment.
Yeah.
So... You know, I've used it, like as Kieran was saying, our battery charger broke when we were in America. And that was like, oh no, what do we do if we can't charge our batteries? So we took it apart and that had the exact same, you know, universal.
Yeah, screw was loose.
Yeah.
So it just does screws and Allen keys.
Yeah,
and all
pretty much.
Base plates of cameras.
Yeah. When we get our Red camera, I'll have to do that.
Yeah,
the expensive toothbrush, so important. Dental hygiene
is important.
True. I reckon like a $200 toothbrush.
I should have bought one. Big fan.
Toothbrushes are very affordable, I realised, because I had to buy one to like for scrubbing the edge of these boots.
Ah, right. Yeah.
And they're actually really fucking cheap.
Yeah.
But yeah, I didn't even realise.
I love my electric toothbrush.
The toothbrush.
Yeah, I don't have one of those.
That'd get something bougie.
All right. If you had to pick for the audience one movie, doco, or show to watch, what would it be and why?
Only because it's the first thing that comes to my head, but it's really great. Free Solo. It's a documentary about a climber who free solos El Capo.
Yeah.
Is El Capo? I think so, yeah. Is
it the guy with the massive hands?
Yeah. Alex Honnold.
Yeah, he's got some sort of like Dutch or Scandinavian name.
Yeah, but it is just insane. It's like one of the most, it's weirdly thrilling when it's just a documentary about climbing. Yeah.
The guy who actually filmed that, unfortunately, passed away recently. He fell.
David.
Either him or it was a climber who was with him.
Oh.
David, what's his name?
Sure.
He's got a Asian background. He might be Chinese or Korean.
Yeah. He's an incredibly talented filmmaker and
So it was either climber. Him or he posted about someone who had died. I really want to look this back up. Because he was on Tim Ferriss's podcast and I listened to it and he's fascinating because he did a doco on someone who climbed K2.
Wow.
And then someone who climbed like the biggest rock face in the world unmanned. I don't think it was before the El Capo doco. And I was just like, fuck me, these guys are just, it's just nuts.
Yeah, well, there was a documentary that I saw before watching the movie that was how they actually filmed it. And they spoke to all the filmmakers being like asking questions like, what happens if he falls? And they're like, I don't know. Like, do I film it? Do I not? Like, I've come to this realization that if I would go ahead with this project, there's a chance I might just watch my friend, because they're all so talented climbers. They all know each other. He's like, I might just watch my friend fall to his death.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like,
yeah, that's the wow, that is a real possibility when they take on that stuff.
Yeah, but you see them like hanging, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of meters.
Without any rope.
No, but like with ropes, but holding like huge cinema kind of sets, the filmographers and the cinematographers.
Yeah.
Yeah, really great.
I'm going to have to rewatch that.
Yeah.
What about you, Kieran?
Oh, this one's a hard one. I
gave you so much time.
Yeah, I was trying to think, I thought of a good answer. It's Nathan For You, the TV show.
Yeah, that was a fucking
which I feel
show.
Like is quite underrated for just how good it is and how talented Nathan For You is.
That's been mentioned before now.
Has it?
Yeah.
Oh, in that case, Speed Racer.
Oh, okay. No, what I'm saying is it signifies that it is underrated. I think it's a very underrated show.
I think it is. Yeah.
I've watched clips on it on YouTube, and I can't believe I never found it.
I can't
until
think of a funnier TV
it.
Show.
Yeah.
Personally.
He just puts people in very weird positions.
It's just so creative. It's so original. So creative. It's hilarious.
Kieran, Walt, thanks for coming in, guys.
No,
where can people find you on the interwebs?
Lots of places,
yeah.
Instagrams are ShareGear, Dynamic Visuals AU, Walt Mather, Kieran BW. Then you can visit
Kieran
our website.
Kieran with an A too.
Yeah,
Kieran with an A, yeah.
Kieran with an A, yep. Kieran BW on Instagram. And then at ShareGear for everything, and then at Dynamic Visuals AU for mostly everything, except our YouTube channel.
And then obviously dynamicvisuals.com and ShareGear.com.
Yep.
.au. Both AU.
Yeah.
We'll link all of them. I recommend people go check out the YouTube channel. Otherwise, gents, thanks for coming in.
No worries.
Thank you very much. Jordan.
Thanks for listening in to this episode. If you like it, do leave us a written review on your podcast app, as it helps us continue going on a weekly basis, and we do love reading those reviews as well. If you want the show notes, you can find that below, or with our previous guest at neural.com/podcast. That's neural.com/podcast. To watch the full video, search Uncommon Show on YouTube, and to keep up to date with behind the scenes and clips for the show, you can find us at uncommon_show on Instagram. But until next time, guys, thank you so much for listening.